Welcome one and all once again to a very special episode of Nerds on the Rocks. I am joined once again by Daniel.
Hello.
Well, hey, Daniel. It's really confusing when there's like three Daniels on this site. And with this weekend being the Survivor Series, the second longest running pay-per-view in WWE history, really like the fourth most important one on their current rotation, I figured it would be a good time to do the second part of our... Well, I guess if the first one was Intro to Pro Wrestling, this is Pro Basics of Pro Wrestling. This will be a show that literally goes over the logistics of a wrestling match. Who's in it? How do you win? How do you lose? That can be two different things sometimes. And I will say up front, and this might get annoying, that for the sake of length and brevity, we are mostly going to focus on how to win and lose a match, which will spark some discussion about match types, but we won't cover that here because there are so many different match types. And getting into especially some of the semantical arguments of like the difference between a no-holds-barred match versus a false count anywhere match versus a street fight versus a death match, where they're pretty much the same thing with variants.
Pretty similar.
So we'll save that. So I will apologize up front because I know it's going to get annoying if you keep on saying, oh yeah, we'll talk about that another time. But you can't have one without the other, which sounds redundant when I'm talking about skipping it. But I figured for this one, we'll focus purely on the basics. And just to kind of throw us in the deep end and already start with that. For the essence of this, like I said, the Survivor Series is this weekend. It is the 27th annual, I believe. And one of the reasons I wanted to pick this one for the basis of pro wrestling is the Survivor Series match itself is traditionally a 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 competitive competition elimination style, which we'll get into in a second. And due to the nature of the Survivor Series, you'll just end up with a ton of variants on how to win a match. Well, it was a match because you have to eliminate the entire other team, which means at a minimum there's at least 5 falls to a match. At a maximum, there's 9. So most of them aren't just purely pinfall or submission most of the time.
Yeah.
So
that'd get boring if it was all pinfalls.
Yeah. Though sometimes, I mean, We'll talk about the Survivor Series. Okay, the Survivor Series match I always find funny because it breaks the traditional rules of pro wrestling, not just in how you work out the who wins and who loses and stuff like that, but in the sense that a lot of like the strategy goes out of the way or the match would go on forever. So you'll have teammates who don't break up pins and people who get pinned with the most obscure random moves like a clothesline or a roll-up. That doesn't really happen in actual matches, but in order to get through 10 people, you take shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, starting with the very basics, a pro wrestling match traditionally is one-on-one. You make your entrances, theme music, pyro, whatever, and the announcer comes on. Howard Finkel, Ian Garcia, Jeremy Borash, I forget the forehead chick in TNA name, but a ton of people.
Yeah.
And you don't hear this traditionally anymore, Michael Buffer, I guess. You don't hear this anymore as often, but usually it says, this match is scheduled for one fall. And that's something that we don't really listen to anymore because most matches are by default scheduled for one fall. And that means that the first person who scores a victory wins the match. There are variants of that. Iron Man matches, 2 out of 3 falls matches, tag team matches, elimination matches, and stuff like that. So, one fall to a finish. What does a fall mean in pro wrestling, though? And there are several of them. The most basic is a pinfall. And what is a pinfall in pro wrestling? It is getting your opponent down to the mat. Both shoulders have to be flat on the mat for a count of 3. Do you know why it's a count of 3?
I don't. Do you know?
No, I'm actually really curious because logically, 1 would make sense because you just have to pin the person real quick. And 5 would make sense because 5's a number that you're associated with. 3's always seem so strange to me, but it doesn't seem strange because I'm used to it, but it's always such an odd, it was always such an odd pick.
Yeah, I think I think it's 3 seconds in professional, like,
I've always found that funny that amateur wrestling is actually legitimate wrestling and pro wrestling is actual the fictional stuff we talk about. But I think it's only 2 seconds
yeah,
in
amateur
wrestling.
Yeah, so it says here,
wrestling.
This is Wikipedia, so this is obviously true, that collegiate wrestling, a pin is for 1 second. So, yeah, that's what it seems like. Can't really... I'm going to look it up. Collegiate... I'm assuming it's based somewhat off Greco-Roman wrestling or something.
But was that 3 seconds? I mean, we probably don't want to... We should. It's the basics, and we're learning the basics ourselves. Like, I know it's 3 seconds, and I guess in their heads it creates drama because you have... Like, for the most part, one just means the person's fresh. Two creates dramatic effect. And three's there. I don't know. Like I said, I think five makes more sense. Maybe they don't think there's drama because there's too many in between where it's like one, two, three, four. Like, you know, there's no rhythm to that. It's, I mean, three always works out, again, because three is really fast. But if you wanted that, one would make sense too. But there's no drama to it.
Yeah, and, well, one of the things refs do is, depending on if it's what kind of ref it is, they'll sometimes go really slow. So, you know, a 3 second count could be 5 seconds or more, you know.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, even though it's a three count, that doesn't necessarily mean 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Because, and you'll get this sometimes, especially when they want a storyline purpose, they'll have fast counts where 3 seconds can just mean, like, okay, when we say a three count, it already means referee hitting their mat to the canvas three times in its section and making sure the person's pinned. Because there are times, especially, you know, like if a ref's incapacitated or something to build drama, you'll have that really show count where like everyone's like 5 seconds and they pull their hand way back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really not, it's really not 3 seconds. It's just three, you know, he has to hit the mat three times.
Yeah.
The ref.
Yes, and then that is the traditional way that a match ends. When that happens, match over. The other common way, even though people go away from it now because of how complicated it is, though UFC really helped them with this, it was submissions. Submissions means that you put your opponent in such a painful position that they have no other alternative but to give up. In the olden days, you used to have to literally go up to Russia and ask them if they give up, and that was just a visual cue. It was either the person shaking their head or, you know, shaking their head yes or shaking their head no. And what they found is that didn't work for every move, because certain moves, like the sharpshooter and stuff, it works well, but stuff like the crossface and stuff, where the person's head is actually in a position where they can't do that, it didn't work out. So thanks to the UFC, what the UFC started to do is have people actually have to tap out. And what you would do is you'd tap out on the person's body because you may not have a position to tap out on the mat or whatever. And that would signify that you gave up. And wrestling pretty much adapted that to the point where traditionally you tap out on the mat. And, for the dramatic sake, people tend to exaggerate it a ton where it's just like them rolling their hands away or whatever. You'll still have occasions where they'll tap out on somebody's body, like we recently had at SummerSlam with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm. Another thing they used to do is they would, if you seemed like you were passing out, I don't know, do they still do this? But they would lift your arm up.
I was about to get to that.
Hulk Hogan a lot, and they'd lift, if your arm fell three times, the match would be over. So
yeah.
He'd lift it once, you know, his arm would fall, lift it twice, and then on the third time, it'd be shaking, and he'd do this big comeback. So I kind of like that, too.
Yeah, and they still do. I mean, that is more considered a knockout. It's in the same vein as that is something you don't see as often. It used to be big in the 80s and stuff when you had people who did some sleeper finishes like Million Dollar Man and stuff like that. And again, it creates the drama. Like you said, what we usually see nowadays is the person's arm drops once, their arm drops twice, and then they go up and their arm's about to drop for the third time and they get that surge of energy and they hulk up or whatever. And it's a nice heat spot. And as a lot of people know, it's a rest period for a lot of wrestlers where you kind of catch your breath and sometimes you talk over the strategy of the wrestling match. But that is not seen as often. And I don't know why, because it's a very simple finisher. But I think it's more clean for the person to lose that way instead of losing by submission, because then they're actively given up. They're actively shown that they're given up.
And it's come up actually a bit recently. There's the Brock Lesnar versus Undertaker, and also the John Cena versus Rusev. Both of those cases, they didn't tap out, but they passed out, which isn't really something. But they you know, at that point, it's just the ref saying, "Oh yeah, they passed out." They didn't have any kind of like drama of doing something three times. I think that might have added to those. But.
Yeah, and that happens sometimes where it's up to, up to the referee's discretion, being like, okay, this person can no longer respond. You don't see that as often, but a recent example would be Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, where he it was knocked out. He couldn't continue the match, and a referee called for it. Yes.
That was a very weird finish. You don't see that much in wrestling. It was it's a lot like boxing or UFC.
Yeah, and that's what makes it unique. Again, that's what makes it special. I mean, you know, one of the big things about Cena, and I think a lot of faces in WWE, especially their mega faces, is they don't give up. They don't surrender. So one of the ways to get around that is something like that, or something like the passing out, because again, it makes more sense than having them actively give up, because it's like they fought through the pain, but they never surrender. I mean, the most famous example of that would be Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13,
mm-hmm.
where he has the blood dripping off his face, and he's in such excruciating pain that he'd rather pass out from the pain than give up and prove that he's inferior.
Yeah, I'm curious why they don't do like a boxing, because you know the whole point, you know the whole thing of boxing and knockouts is, and this is probably where they got the countouts that we'll get to, is the 10 seconds on the mat. And they don't really do that. That'd be kind of, maybe like a 5 count would be cool. Like, you know, like they pull him away, pull Bret Hart away, and, you know, give him 5 seconds, and he could like struggle and then just fall to the, or I don't know.
I mean, technically speaking, that is kind of the notion of a last man standing match.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in a second. You mentioned one that we don't see ever, and I'm actually happy for the most part, because I think it's kind of lame, is the mat count, in that if a wrestler or wrestlers are down for a 10 count, the match ends. I don't honestly remember the last time I've seen this ending to a match, as far as outside of a last man standing match. But yes, if both people are down inside the ring, the referee will count to 10, and if you can't make it to your feet, it's considered a, I think it's a disqualification. No, it's considered a knockout. Like I said, I don't see it. It's a really bad ending for matches if you use it, because it's just like weak, because it's in the ring. It's nothing special. And it doesn't really have drama, because we don't see it that often. It's just really, it would be really strange to kind of put it out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's 4 basic finishes. There's the pin, there's the submission, there's the count out, and then...
Before the count out, there's the disqualification.
Well, and yeah, that was the 4th one I was going to mention.
I was going to say disqualification happens more than count outs, because sure, count outs are the same thing. I mean, the same logic as it's weird for people to stay down for 10. Most of the time you see a count out is usually when a heel doesn't want to. Either a heel doesn't want to continue the match, so it's a cowardly way out, or like the face gets knocked out behind the referee's back at like an 8 count and can't make it back into the ring. You don't often see like a 10 count, because they fought so hard that one person got knocked out for 10 seconds outside the ring.
Yeah, I think it was more common. I think what happened is that they've realized that people don't come away happy no matter what the ending is. You know, whether doesn't matter who wins, when there's a count out finish, it's sort of this anticlimactic.
Well, I think it's. I mean, there are ways for it to work, but what happens, and we'll talk about this all the time, is that you can depend on it too often. Like, especially with like so much TV, like, countouts and DQs happen so much on a week to week basis that it no longer feels special. It's kind of going back to Survivor Series '95. since that was 20 years ago. It was the first time that WWF had done a big table spot. And Brett was dead. They paid off Bret Hart being dead after that table spot. And now table spots happen so often, we don't really expect the match to end there. Or, like, the person's knocked out. Which, you know, they'll be down for a bit, but they'll come back, and there'll be, like, another 10, 15 minutes of a match after that.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with a countout. A countout, I mean, especially now, most of the time, countouts happen on purpose. Like, Kevin Owens will famously walk out of a match and take a 10 count. And like, if he was the only person doing that, that would be fine, because, especially as a champion, it builds heel heat.
Yeah, but I think we should talk about title belts and how you keep them, how you win them, because I think that's to how you finish a match, too.
Yeah, but before we get there, because that's a good point, we should just talk about real quick the disqualifications, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And a disqualification can happen in a bunch of ways. There are RS rules now, just to kind of really quick geek over some that I used to love that no longer happen. In WCW, we weren't allowed to jump off the top rope. And you couldn't throw anybody over the top rope. Those were both instant disqualifications.
That's so weird.
Yes, those were terrible, terrible rules. I have no idea why they were ever implemented, but those existed. Nowadays, most of the time, it's just for performing an illegal maneuver. So, you know, anything, basically, if you can't do it in other sports, you can't do it in pro wrestling. You can't kick somebody in the nuts. You can't hit them with a chair. You can't hit them with any foreign object.
Yeah, it's really more hitting with the foreign object. People, you know, having a friend come in and help you when when it's not supposed to happen. That's typical.
You're not supposed to put your hands on the referee, even though that one is a bit more wishy-washy than the rest of them. Technically speaking, though, we don't see this as often. You can't, you know, you're not supposed to pull somebody's, you're not supposed to poke somebody's eyes. You're not supposed to pull their hair. Most of the time, you won't get DQ for that stuff. You just get admonished by the referee.
Yeah, they used to be better about that, where they would, where the bad guy, the heel, would distract the referee somehow, maybe with a manager or someone, you know, one of his buddies, and then he would do something that, if the referee saw it, would get him disqualified, which gets the crowd really into it. But because the ref didn't see it, and this still happens, but it was more often, you know, happened more in the 80s and 90s, and then he would look, turn back, and then...
Oh, you know. Yeah, and that is, again, you know, that's going to the art of managers and how that's kind of missing. But another one that kind of is in the same vein as far as heel heat goes, that we don't often see anymore, is technically speaking, in a tag team match, you're supposed to tag in and out, and if you don't, you can get counted out as a disqualification. That does not happen often anymore either, because it's a very lame finish. But yes, you can get counted.
I think I remember seeing that in a long time.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen... Like, I've seen people get disqualified for, like, an extended 2-on-1 beatdown in a tag match, but I don't think I've ever seen somebody get counted, like, disqualified for not tagging.
Yeah.
But yes, those are the... Just to recap real quickly, the four basics are pinfall, submission, disqualification, countouts. There are variations on those that we'll get to in a second, but to Daniel's point, we should mention... that those are the traditional rules, but there are certain rules. The rules vary in a title match. They exist the same, but for the most part, a championship can only be won by pinfall or submission. So you have to beat the champion most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
If the champion or the challenger are disqualified or counted out, the title remains with the champion. Most of the time. And I hate saying that. I just don't want to use absolute terms, because in rare circumstances, you do not have to pin or submit the champion to make them use the title, but that's more dependent on the match types. But there are up chances, usually storyline purposes, where if the champion gets counted out or disqualified, they will use the title. And historically, I've always found that a lame way to change champions.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, because I think one of the things that kind of kills kayfabe, or, you know, the idea that wrestling is real, is that since you can only lose your title if you're a bad guy, you can only lose your title through a submission or a pinfall, why wouldn't you just get disqualified every title match.
Yeah, that
just get counted out.
That, I mean, that is one of the things with pro wrestling storytelling these days. And part of it is a suspension of disbelief. But there are times where people are put in situations where I'm just like, I don't understand why you're doing what you're doing. Because from a storyline standpoint, from a rules standpoint, there's easy ways to circumnavigate that. Like you said, with the championship, like a recent example, we had, most of Seth Rollins' offenses was him afraid of the challenger. But like with Brock Lesnar, like why not smack him and run out the ring for 10 seconds?
Yeah.
Or just co-cock the referee as soon as the match starts.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's logic. You need an actual match. Most recently, even though it didn't come into the finish, I think when Nikki Bird defended her title against Paige, there was this stipulation that if he got disqualified or counted out, she'd be stripped of the title and it'd be handed to Charlotte.
Yeah. That's usually a way they'll extend a storyline so that people can have multiple matches. So someone will win, but it'll be a disqualification, and that prompts a rematch where they, you know, no disqualification, or if they do it, they lose the title. And it brings some drama. I think part of the way you can justify it is that the idea is that, first of all, if you win a match, theoretically you make more money that day. So the heel wants money, so they want to win the match, like, you know, either by pin or submission. And also it's sort of a pride thing, I guess, like,
And
they don't want to lose that way. They don't want to lose but still keep the title that way, I guess.
And that goes back to something that we've mentioned before, where the commentators don't really sell it anymore. Like, you know, people don't mention that you get more money being a champion and winning matches. People don't mention, you know, the pride of the champion or their will to win or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest issues with wrestling today is not the wrestling itself, but the stuff around it, especially the commentary. I mean, I think Michael Cole, who is the main sort of play-by-play, is okay. I mean, he's not Jim Ross, who was the big guy in the 90s. But Jim, you know, especially the color guys, could do a much better job of selling that, of selling the reasons that the heel wants to win and win in a certain way.
Yeah, because in theory, both men should want to win and prove that they're superior, and a disqualification or any type of shortcut should be seen as such and not just like, oh, why don't they just do this? And sometimes that element is missing in storytelling. But that gets into a whole different beast that we won't get into. But yes, for the most part, in a traditional one-on-one singles match, a championship can only change hands via pinfall submission. And if anybody's disqualified, counted out, the championship remains with the champion most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Tag team matches work similar to... Tag team matches are basically one-on-one matches with two-on-two. It ends with one fall the same way. So there's not much different in those core match types. So again, you know, we'll go with those two basic ones as far as match types go. Now, this is where we get into the really, really, really annoying part of match endings and match types.
Mm-hmm.
So I said before that a match can end via pinfall, submission, count out, disqualification. I also mentioned before that the Survivor Series is a 5-on-5 elimination style match, which means that it's not one fall to a finish, and that the match, no matter how the person loses, not wins, no matter how the person loses, they will be eliminated from the match. So you can get counted out, you can get disqualified, you can get pinned, you can get submitted, and you're gone. So it doesn't matter how it happens. If it happens, you're out of there.
Yeah. And it's really unique because it's such a different kind of thing. They do it sometimes, and usually like in the lead up to Survivor Series, like on Raw, like I think they did it last week. But the rest of the year, it's kind of unique. I think that's why people like Survivor Series, people like the Rumble, because they're different, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think they've taken away from the Survivor Series in years past, is that they've kind of gotten rid of the you know, like Survivor Series used to be the 5-on-5 was the entire pay-per-view. Now you get maybe one or two of those matches on the show. And since we're already talking about it, just to confuse people even more, they only did this 1 or 2 years in a row. But there was a time where Survivor Series had a bunch of Survivor Series matches, and the survivors, the people remaining at the end of the match, whether it's one person or five people, would all go on to the Ultimate Survivor match at the end of the night, which meant that everybody who had won would compete again in a 5-on-5, whatever it turned out to be, like 5-on. It could turn out to be like 7-on-2 or 5-on-5 or 6-v-3. It didn't have to be even. It didn't have to add up to 10. I think 1 year it actually ended up being like 2-on-6 with Hogan and Warrior, and they won anyhow, so whatever.
Not surprising.
So, yes. So, yeah, that was fun. And that's that's another type of, ending in a tournament setting is that you can, and that's what we'll get in this year, so obviously we are getting a tournament.
Yeah.
And tournaments work like a traditional 1-on-1 match. And, again, depending on how you win, it doesn't matter how you win, you advance as long as you beat the person. The only addition that tends to be in WWE tournaments, or tournaments in general, is a hard time limit. So, if you hit a time limit, it's a draw. We don't see draws often outside of tournaments because most matches don't have time limits anymore.
And that's part of the reason I'm really excited for this year's Survivor Series is tournaments. I think WWE's getting they sometimes try to move, and as you talked about it with the knockouts in UFC.
But, oh yeah.
Doing tournaments makes winning matter, and you get to see people wrestle multiple times, which is interesting. You know, it's how, you know, if something that happened in the match before can affect the match, the next one, even if they win, a bad guy can hurt the good guy and he can have a bad chance of winning the next one. So, it takes it from, you know, like college basketball and now college football as a tournament. So and everybody relates to a tournament, you know? So I think they should do it more often.
Yeah, I was about to say, one of the good things about it is that they don't do it that often. Like, I do think they should, especially when they had the King of the Ring, I used to like it when that was around. And I guess they had one this year, but that was so, whatever. But, yeah, it was, because this is really the third major tournament for WWE, if you don't count the King of the Ring stuff. They had a title tournament at WrestleMania 4, they had a title tournament at, Series 98, and now they have this title tournament. And like you said, it's compelling in the sense that it gives every match weight. Every match is important. And that's something sometimes you miss out on because it's like, why should I care about, what was it, Kalisto versus Ryback? Like, why would I care about that outside of a tournament setting? But now it's like, okay, who's going to win? Who's going to advance? Where are they going to fight? And like you said, though this one only has, I think this one's only 2 rounds, which is kind of boring.
Yeah, I wish it was more rounds on the actual paper.
Yeah. Because, yeah, like you said, you go back to King of the Ring 93 and Bret Hart, like, over the course of the even, gets more and more injured. And it's like, will Bret Hart be able to stand up and fight? And, you know, it builds into the drama because you've seen him wrestle 2 times before. And then he fights a third time, he injures his leg, and then he comes out for a 4th time. And you're like, okay, you know, we're really pulling from him. It's a great way to create an underdog face. Or an extremely dastardly heel who takes advantage of the face, who's been working all night long for this.
Yeah, and they didn't go this way, but they could have done something with the Wyatts where they're kind of the major bad guys faction, at least. And they could have had, you know, Roman Reigns go up against one of his underlings, and Roman Reigns could win, but, you know, he could try to injure him so that later on he could take advantage of it or something. It would have been kind of interesting.
I mean, they can still do something at the actual pay-per-view, but it won't be as impactful if there's only 2 matches and there's more time in between. Like, you know, you look at Macho Man at WrestleMania 4, where it's like there was like 10 minutes in between his 2 matches or something like that, and it builds drama.
Yeah.
But, yeah, And you know, kind of to give them props, I was a fan of this, and they're doing it now. I've always liked TNA's Bound for Glory series, which was a point system, which most wrestling shows companies don't use. But like, you got points based on wins and losses, and it made sense because you got more points for a pinfall or submission. But you know, you can still win by DQ or countout, but you get less points. So it gave a sense of like, why doesn't this person just go for a countout or whatever? It's because you wanted to maximize the points. And it was, you know, it was like 2 or 3 months. So every match in that 2 or 3 months was important because you were all vying to be number one, so you'd become the number one contender for the world title.
Yeah, I love that idea. I mean, I think one of the reasons that matches where a title isn't first on, you know, isn't at stake, can be boring is because there isn't anything at stake. If there was at least some points, or, you know, sometimes they'll have qualifying matches, but it seems kind of, even when they do like a number one contender tournament or match for number one contender, it usually seems pretty random, and Georgia's sort of just like whoever the people in charge want to see be in there, and not like they earned it their way there.
Yeah, it's a thing. But let's see, what else do we have to talk about? Mention Survivor Series. Okay, we mentioned the Royal Rumble. We'll talk more about the Royal Rumble in January, because the Royal Rumble is my absolute favorite match, and this one is unique. Well, I mean, it falls into the same camp as the Battle Royal for the most part. In that the only way to actually get rid of somebody in this match is to throw them over the ropes and both of their feet have to touch the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds simple enough, but everybody becomes gymnasts at the Royal Rumble time.
And it gives a huge advantage to those really big guys that are like 400, 500 pounds that, you know, they always make that part of the equation is, how are they going to throw the giant over the ropes, you know, because it's impossible.
Yeah. and they have to make sure it's over the top rope, because, there's that drama, but you think about, you know, like, sometimes it's just like the person just has to be, and that's not as fun. Like, you can kick somebody underneath the bottom rope, but there's a drama to, like, how are you going to get somebody as big as, like, the Big Show, Andre the Giant, or the Great Khali over the top rope? With that mass, like, you can't pick them up. No, there are people who can't pick them up, but
yeah. And when you went back to the 2 feet, and that is something they've. I think it was Shawn Michaels who really perfected the art of it, where he would get flipped over but hold on to the ropes and keep his feet up, and then he would flip back. And it was, you know, very exciting, you know.
Skimming the cat.
Yeah, and Kofi Kingston's done that, where he'll, like, surf on, because there are bodies outside the ring where people have been thrown out. So if you jump on someone's body and then jump back, you're good, because that you didn't touch the floor.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's kind of comical, but again, it's used for comedy. It's used for, you know, to break up the action. But yes, because the rules are both of your feet have to touch the floor, and they have to do it in succession. So you can't be tossed over one foot hurts, tossed over again and the other foot hurts. They both have to be. Usually what it means is you clear the ring. Like, you have to be clear out of the ring most of the time.
Yeah.
You don't land on the apron. You don't dangle off the side of the ropes or anything like that.
Yeah.
So yes, pinfall, submissions, countouts, disqualifications, none of that matters. Like, I mean, for the most part, you can't bring weapons in, because technically you can eliminate yourself, which is sometimes a rule, sometimes not a rule. I guess to break it down a bit more scientifically, because the rules of the Royal Rumble change year to year, you can't self-eliminate most of the time. There are occasions where they just, like, whatever. And you technically can't be eliminated by somebody who's already been eliminated. So, if somebody comes in and clears the ring after they've been eliminated, none of those technically count. There has been once or twice, where they're like, whatever, those people are out.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, if you're tossed over by somebody, or you're in the process of being tossed over by somebody, and somebody else assists with that tends to count. It's like if you're on the apron and somebody pulls you off of the egg, somehow that counts. One thing I will say, as far as the basics work, but as far as like anything super out of the norm, wrestling rules are very fluid in that they change depending on how they feel the storyline needs to go.
Yeah. Especially the Royal Rumble. Royal Rumble rules can be very confused.
Yeah. Like I said, there have been years where people have self-eliminated. There have been years where it didn't count. There have been years where people have come back and tossed people out and it's counted. There's been years where people don't make it into the Royal Rumble and that counts as an elimination. There's been times where people have been knocked out beforehand, but as long as they make it into the ring, people have fallen. You know, there's all types of rules. It changes year to year. I mean, the basics remain the same, but like the extraneous rules, the ones you don't see that often, seem to vanish depending on their mood or the year.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about ladder matches, or do you want to save that for...
No, I was going to... We still have ladder matches, cage matches, and some other ones that, again, most of them do fall under the basic rules. And I guess we can talk about... We'll talk about ladder matches now. We'll talk about the gimmick matches. I'm just trying to think if there's any more, like, standard variations on the core rules before you get into gimmick matches. Oh.
Well, they can do...
Iron Man matches. Iron Man.
So that's Iron Man. When they say one fall
to a finish.
So when I think they should do this more, but you know, Iron Man is usually first to three, I think, right?
No.
No?
Iron Man match is there's
first
there's
60 minutes.
Yeah, there's a hard time limit. It can be between, it's either 30 or 60 minutes usually. And it's whoever scores the most amount of falls in that time period, no matter how the fall is scored. So pins, submissions, disqualification, countouts, everything adds up. And if you can have, it can be 10-9 at the end. It can be 1-0. It can be 5-2, whatever. Traditionally, I mean, for the most part, they try to keep it relatively close so that there's some drama to the match. But yes, it's an Iron Man match is... It's a hard time limit, and it's whatever happens in that 60 that time limit counts. So, however you score a fall, gets added to your tally. Now, what's similar but not is a 2 out of 3 falls match, which means you have to win 2 out of 3 falls via same method, but you don't have to win 2 in a row. You don't have to but you have to win 2. So you can win 1 by disqualification and 1 by countout, and you technically win the match. You can win, you can win both by pinfall. You can win one by pinfall, one by submission. As long as you win 2.
Yeah, I like that kind of match because what you can do is you can play around with it where you can have the guy who's going to win be down 2-0 and then have.
Well, you can't be down 2-0.
Best of 5 you could be down 2-0, but best of 3 you could be down 1-0 and. Have it look like he's going to lose and then have this huge comeback. So I kind of like that. I feel like NXT does that more than WWE does necessarily.
What they do now more often than not isn't necessarily a 2 out of 3 falls match. They do what they call the 3 stages of hell match, which is similar in concept, except it tends to be 3 different matches. So the first one they've ever done was it was Austin versus Triple H, and it was the first match you had to win by pinfall. The second match you had to win by submission, and then the third match was a cage match. So you can play with it that way, where you have somebody like I think it was a normal match. It was a street fight, and then it was a cage match. And then what you can do with that is you can play around with like, Stone Cold is Terry the Brawler, so he's going to win the street fight. He just needs to win the first fall. And what happens there is, Triple H wins the first fall. And then Austin has to win the street fight, and Triple H wins that. Because it switches up the roles and what you traditionally expect from the other one. So you can play with that drama. They've done one, I think they did one with Shawn Michaels and Triple H, where it was, one was a table match, one was a ladder match. And, again, that adds a certain element of strategy and changes up the match. How do you change your strategy in between the rounds?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing is playing with expectations. I think, like with Survivor Series with Roman Reigns, it's sort of assumed he's going to win. And what you want to do if you're planning making a wrestling event is to throw people's, you know, throw kind of like a magic trick, basically. You know, you want to put their attention over here, but then do something over on the other side and keep people off balance. So, yeah.
Yeah, and longer matches help with that. Okay, so getting into gimmick matches, because we mentioned a few of those with Three Stages of the Hell, which just makes it real confusing. The first, and tend to be the simplest one, I think, is the tables match, where the object of the match is simply to put your opponent through a table. That is the only way you can win. It doesn't matter how they get through the table. They can fall in, you can push them, you can suplex them, you can powerbomb them. They can, as long as they get through a table, it doesn't even have to be a standing table. It could be a table on the side of a ring. As long as they get through and it breaks, that's how the match ends.
Right. And those are fun matches. I mean, I think anytime the table's involved, people always get really excited. I think it's more, you know, more of a 90s thing, especially with the Dudleys and the
Edge and Christian.
That was a fun time. That was one probably the time when the tag team division was at its peak.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that, especially in the peak of the Attitude Era. Mm-hmm. But yes, table matches, I enjoyed them, but at the same time, and you'll find this with a lot of gimmick matches, sometimes it's just really, because a table shouldn't really be that difficult to get somebody through, but there's so much setup and people moving tables and, you know, all this nonsense.
If you're going to talk about something that makes sense in theory, but then, you know, the sort of in actuality kind of makes it sort of funny to watch is ladder matches where, you know, the point is to get to the top of a, you know, there's something at the top of the ring and you have to climb a ladder to get it. But people always climb so slowly, like they're crawling through mud and then they get pulled down. It's always funny to me.
I mean, great match type, but yes, the logic behind it or the drama behind it is so forced at times. It is comical because you'll get people who clearly have no idea where the object is because the ladder is like on the other side of the ring. And then they get up there like, why can't I reach it? Like, because, like, you should look up at the shadow and see where, like, it's on the other side of the ring. Like, there's no chance of you getting it. Or, you know, like, somebody will set up a ladder and then somebody else will knock it down to set up another ladder. Like, why not just leave the one in the ring? It makes more sense when there's multiple people because then it's fast paced. You can have people knocking it down, but one on one, it tends to be like, yeah, there's a lot of setup, and then you have this crawl where everybody's like on death row, like they have no energy. Like, it makes sense after like 40 minutes. It doesn't make sense after two.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you want to watch a good one, can't remember which WrestleMania was, but it Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's it's just the epitome of how you do it. I think when you get more than two people involved, which typically is how they do it now. I mean, I can't remember the last time they did just a one-on-one ladder match.
I'm sure they've done one. They usually do them at TLC, don't they?
Probably. That makes sense.
I don't even remember who the champion was at. Oh, no, Brock wasn't at TLC last year. What did they do? Maybe it was Bray Wyatt. No, Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose had a TLC match, didn't they?
Maybe. But I think the most common is...
Oh, no, they did it with Ambrose and Rollins at Extreme Rules.
Okay, yeah.
Or Money in the Bank, I should say. They did a table match there, because they did that spot where they were both tugging on the belt, and they both fell off, and Rollins had it in his possession.
Yeah, and Money in the Bank is typically where you're guaranteed one, where the briefcase that guarantees you a title shot is,
in theory.
Although the logic behind that is probably the most confusing thing in all of wrestling.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's usually where you see it
Oh, okay. And just to clarify a bit, because we said, and in theory it is correct, you are supposed to climb up the ladder and retrieve whatever's on top of it, but technically the rule is you have to come down with it, and that is not, the WWE doesn't play with it as much, but that has been played with before, where the person will lose it on their way down, and then it's like a hustle to get it. Or, if you really want to be special, and you want to be TNA, the object of some of their ladder, the King of the Mountain match, is you have to climb up the ladder and face something at the top of the ladder. And that's just really weird.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of creativity, and I think that's why people like the idea of them, but usually the execution is not as great as people would like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, most ladder matches are fun just because they tend to be the destruction derby of pro wrestling, but the logic behind them, if you think about them, and I would also recommend this, don't watch them in a row. I have the Best of Ladder Match DVD they released a few years ago, and yeah, watching like 4 or 5 ladder matches in a row, you realize how many of the spots are similar, how much it's some of the setup is so stupid. But if there's a nice break in between, it makes sense. But if you watch them back, it's like, oh gosh, these are awful, awful things.
Yeah, I mean, the ladder match for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania last year was actually really good. There was a lot of good spots that aren't super typical, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to find creativity, but again, when you do 2 or 3 of them a year, sometimes it becomes really, really difficult.
The other problem is it's very dangerous. You know, you like to say wrestling's fake, but ladder matches are really dangerous, and I don't think the ladder match had anything to do with Daniel Bryan's...
It doesn't help.
...semi-permanent retirement, but yeah, it definitely didn't help, so I feel like that's part of the reason, maybe, that they don't do them as often, but they haven't really, I could see them banning them one day if someone gets really hurt. But hopefully that never happens.
I hope it never happens either, but you never know. You never know. Yeah. So, we also mentioned the cage match, and the cage match is, dependent on their mood, is different. It can be won like a normal match, in that you just have to pinfall submission. There's no disqualification and clearly no count out. But traditionally, what the rule is, and my favorite way for a cage match to go, is the only way for you to win is to escape the cage, either by climbing over top or going through the door. Which I always hate the door, because the door is like, again, it's the same thing with the ladder match, where somebody will ask for the door to be opened, and then they will collapse and have to crawl towards it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish they would just not have a door. I agree. I love when they have to climb up the cage, and that's the only way to win. Hell in a Cell, which was the last pay-per-view, is, people tend to like those a lot, but for me, I like just a traditional cage match where, you know, you have to climb over it and then, you know, get thrown down from pretty high up, and sometimes they'll jump down for no apparent, like they have the match won, but they'll just, you know, do a leg drop or do some kind of move off the top of the cage, just, I don't know, just for fun, I guess.
Yeah, so, and again, going back to commentary, sometimes it makes sense if they can actually sell it. Like, there are times I remember Jeff Hardy, where he would, it's like, will he escape or will he not? And then he'll do something stupid, and you'll have somebody saying, like, oh, he's proven he's a daredevil, he's gone for it all. And then he'll crash and burn, and he'll lose the match. And that makes sense, because it's in his personality where he is a risk taker.
Yeah. And there's not as many guys now, to me, that are like that. Seems like, and I don't think this is a bad thing, but they seem to be going more in terms of the boxer, prize fighter type of person, where, you know, that kind of goes back to, like, why would they do these crazy things instead of just trying to win as easily as possible? But I think that helped to explain that in the past, where people were more characters, and so it made sense that, like, the Undertaker would not want to, like, be counted out. He was going to do whatever it takes to win, you know, in the ring.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, again, it depends on the character. Like, it makes sense for somebody like John Cena, who's always about overcoming the odds, that he'll fight through pain and suffering, and he won't get counted out or disqualified or whatever, or Undertaker, or Stone Cold. And then there's people like, you know, Rollins, where it made sense where he would take shortcuts because that's his character and stuff like that. So some characters it works for, some it doesn't. The problem is, like, you have to be consistent with that, and they aren't always that way. But yes, you also mentioned the Hell in a Cell match. And a Hell in a Cell match is pretty similar to a cage match, in that you can win by pinfall submission, but those are the only ways you can win. There's no count out, there's no disqualification. In theory, there's supposed to be no way to escape. That doesn't stop people. But even if you escape, the match doesn't end until somebody is pinned or submitted. And actually, just to kind of go back to the very beginning, because we should have mentioned this, when we say you can win by pinfall or submission, it means you have to do it inside the ring.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. I bring it up because two things. False count anywhere literally means false count anywhere, and that you can pin somebody in the ring, you can pin them in the newsstand, you can pin them outside, you can pin them in a truck. You can pin them in the crowd, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the Elimination Chamber, which is the third, you have to put people inside of a cage. It, unlike Hell in a Cell or even the cage match, there is a structure in between the outside and the ring, and you can pin people on that as well, because that's metal or whatever. Whatever they want to call it this week. And the Elimination Chamber is, again, pinfall or submission, but that goes into, it has an elimination element to it. It also has an element of timing, which we didn't mention with the Royal Rumble, but everybody doesn't start the match at the same time. People come in over the course of, you know, a half an hour or so, and it's the last person, it's the person who remains standing at the end of the match, the person who scores the final pinfall submission who wins. So you can not pin or submit anybody into the end and still win. And you can eliminate five people and win, so it doesn't really matter.
I think that's probably my least favorite, and I think that's probably fairly common. It's just so complicated, you know.
Yeah, I feel like if the announcer has to spend 5 minutes explaining the rules, and you have to keep on reminding people of the rules, it's not as fun. Like it also depends on who's in the match. Because it has gotten to the point where it's just kind of like BS's because of where they put it on in the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is also part of it. I think if it was like Brock Lesnar, Undertaker, Roman Reigns, John Cena, it'd be different than when it was for the tag team titles. And that was just, I don't know, that was kind of a mess to me when they did that one.
Yeah, what was I going? We don't see this match anymore, but I'm a huge fan of it. Well, I was a huge fan of it, though it also is kind of complicated. War Games, The Match Beyond, was a WCW staple, which is kind of the predecessor of the Elimination Chamber, in that it was a double-sided cage match that was a 5-on-5 elimination match. No, a 5-on-5 match, not elimination. And the OU... The thing, though, is the match only begun when everybody came into the ring. So you would fight for like 20, 25 minutes and nothing can happen until all 10 competitors were in there. So it's one of those matches. And then you can only win by submission.
Yeah, that sounds confusing.
It was fun, and you always knew how it worked out because the heels always had their advantage, because there's no drama if it's two faces beating up on a heel.
Right.
But yeah, that was fun back in the olden days of WCW.
And I think when you were talking about False Count Anywhere, I think that was, I feel like that was a main staple of the Attitude Era, where they kind of, it was almost like they were trying to take some elements of like the real world or reality shows that were just starting, and you know, you'd go into the back areas and they'd be fighting with dumpsters and falling off ladders and all these crazy, like going up into the stands and stuff. And they don't really do that. They do it occasionally, but not as much.
Yeah, but and kind of going to the point we made earlier, it makes more sense now because it makes it feel unique when you actually end up there and not like, because you used to have like the hardcore title and that was defended 24/7, and then matches would just spill through the crowd, they'll spill in the back. Like, it got to be such a trope that was a thing that was, you know, it became big when it got into the wrestling games, and then it got so big that EA even made an entire wrestling game based around fighting in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to say if it'll ever come back, but I think it was kind of an interesting period, or sort of because it got away a lot from the more traditional, oh, it's in a ring with the referee. It's like it was more dangerous.
And I do think that's something they should go back to. If nothing else, I think with this, we have in an era where we're so connected to everything 24 hours a day that they should have a title that's defended on like 24/7 and be like, it would have like network exclusives, like somebody's in an airport and they get beat up or something like that. And that would be fun and different and would give you a reason you can be watching something like breaking news. So-and-so is fighting in, I don't know, a grocery store. We're cutting to that now.
Yeah. And that was a huge part of NWO and going to WCW was, you know, they'd call the cops and the cops would come and they'd be fighting with bats and barbed wire. I mean, and ECW, I mean, I think where wrestling was trying to go was this really dangerous sport that was bloody and, you know, I think they've went away from that a little bit, but it was more about really hurting the other person than it was about winning a match.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was kind of the trash TV, the train wreck era that we lived in at the time. And, you know, we still kind of do, but that has become reality TV, and I don't think wrestling has been able to keep up with that trend. You did mention Blood, and this is a match we don't see often or anymore, honestly. The first Blood match, which is literally what the name implies. The first person who draws Blood wins.
Yeah, I can't even remember the last time I remember seeing one of those.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time. Again, partially because of their whole PG era now.
Yeah. And also, in terms of, it's tough because when you're faking it, you know, scripting it out, it's hard to control bleeding because, you know, what they used to do is hide razor blades, and that's called
Blading.
But, you know, that's very dangerous in and of itself, and so I think they try not to do that as much anymore, but controlling when and how someone's going to bleed is pretty hard for something where you're trying to script it.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, and again, I don't necessarily, like, I understand people miss it, and I don't mind if it comes the hard way, but I don't necessarily need people cutting themselves. Because there's so many health issues related to that as well. Like, you look at some of the older wrestlers, and their foreheads are just disgusting from all the scarring that they've done from cutting themselves time and time again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always the case of transmitting any bloodborne disease and stuff like that. It's just not worth the risk to them just for a little bit of color. It adds drama, but again, if it happens the hard way, or, again, if it happens sparingly, like we saw it with the Undertaker-Brock match, where it's like, oh, man, this happened. Like, it makes for something special. Like, these two are really out here to kill each other.
Yeah, and I don't think there was any blading going on that one. So, and I like it when it happens, even though apparently Vince was, you know, super upset that there was bleeding in that match. But
yeah, but what can he do? He can't fire them.
And no,
They're not around. They're not around often enough for him to do anything. And they're two veterans.
When people fight, there's blood. You know, it almost adds to the.
Especially in such a match as Hell in a Cell, where if you want to sell it as this the ultimate danger match, like, it helps if there is danger at time.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. What else? We mentioned this earlier. Last Man Standing match. Now there are traditionally two forms of Last Man Standing matches. One I hate, and one I like. I like it, but it's still, the gimmick is still kind of weird. The one that you tend to see now, because WWE tends to be the people who put it on, is that your opponent has to stay down for a 10 count. Doesn't matter how, they just have to stay down for a 10 count, which has given rise to more creative solutions, duct taping somebody's feet under the ring, flipping a table on top of somebody, stuff like that. The olden way, which I always hate saying, was that you had to pin your opponent, and then they had to stay down for, I think, a 60 count.
A 60 count?
Yes, like a whole minute.
Wow.
Yeah. You can see why that's not, why they probably don't do that anymore. Like, the only one I know WWF has done is Macho Man versus Crush, and what they ended up doing there is Macho Man ended up tying him to some type of structure on the back. WCW has done it. I think the most famous one is Cactus Jack versus Big Van Vader from Halloween Havoc 93, I want to say. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that, because it's one thing to pin somebody, it's another thing to keep them down for like a whole minute or whatever. And, you know, the drama is, like, how often can you pin somebody, and how often can somebody beat the 60 count at the last second before it's kind of, you can only do that like two or three times in a match before it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's a whole lot of issues there with, you know, the matches typically go about 15 minutes. So you have to get to the point where they're hurt enough to stay down for a minute. And then you got to have the false finish, so it just seems like it would be a nightmare to schedule that.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the reasons they don't do it as much. Well, they don't do that form of it anymore. Is there any other basics you want to touch on before we begin to wrap?
No, I mean, there's definitely a lot of stipulations and stuff that we can go over next time. Or whenever, but yeah, I mean, I think that's the basics. It's really about pinning, submissions, disqualifications, and countouts.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you, Dan, for joining us. You can find us, as always, on nerdsontherocks.com. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. Even though I'm pretty sure Google+ announced they were dying like 6 years ago. Who knows when that's going to happen at Nerds on the Rocks. You can check out the Survivor Series Live on pay-per-view or the WWE Network on November 22nd. It's only 3 hours. And it's a tournament, so it should be fun. I mean, tournaments are fun in that way, even though it's only, you know, 3 matches, I think, in the tournament, which doesn't sound like a tournament when you say that.
You can't. It should be fun.
It should be fun. Tournaments are intriguing because they can be unpredictable. Everybody kind of assumes this is Roman Reigns, but it can be anybody's ball game. In theory.
In theory. I think it's pretty much assumed that it'll be Roman Reigns. I mean, it's really about whether it'll be Roman Reigns the face or Roman Reigns the heel, or maybe Dean Ambrose the heel, but those are pretty much the 3 options.
Yeah, looking at the card they gave us. So yes, check that out. We will be back soon with whatever. Until then, the site itself is doing a mini Star Wars retrospective franchise. Serious, leading up to The Force Awakens in December, And as always, you can check out our comic reviews, movies, TVs, video games, and all that fun jazz. So for Dan and myself, this has been Pro Wrestling Basics and Nerds on the Rocks. Have a good week.
Straight away, no turns.